Welcome to Political Party with Adam Smith. We're lucky to have the bad boy of St. Petersburg City Council, Robert Blackman, who I think is going to announce his candidacy for mayor today. Is that right?
Not today.
Well, I do want to get that out of the way because we've only got a few weeks left before qualifying. And full disclosure, I'm helping Ken Welch, but you are acting like a guy who's doing everything he can to raise his profile for a mayor's race. I don't think you're running, but let's close that door once and for all.
Open it. I'll be completely honest. I have been fielding more and more phone calls. It's the more you do and you put a viewpoint out there, it's refreshing to me that people seem to, a lot of what I said seems to resonate with people. So I take phone calls every day about mayor's office, and I'm absolutely considering it still. So it's something I've been looking at, and it's something I'm going to continue to look at. And if there's a demand there, I think I can fill a void, then yeah, I'll get in.
And then you'd have to resign your city council seat if you ran for mayor, which is the main reason I don't think you'll run. But you're saying you're still thinking about it. I would have thought that Darden Rice, one of the leading candidates, endorsed you when you ran for city council. I would have thought you'd be endorsing her for mayor.
I love Darden. Darden's done a lot of good stuff for our city. She's a hard campaigner. She's an earnest person. I just think, we need to talk it out, right? And in debate, we can debate our similarities and our differences. And there's a lot that I respect about her. There's a ton I respect about Ken. And, maybe I don't get in, but I certainly think that there are some viewpoints that are being overlooked right now. We need to make sure that we keep a people first mentality always in politics, especially local politics, because when I got into council, right, people would ask me, if you're doing a good job, what do you think you'd see as your accomplishments? And just getting the basic services done. I mean, I get no greater joy, and I say this completely honestly, than getting an email from somebody who's all steamed up saying, I got this problem in my neighborhood, making a couple calls, making a couple emails and getting it done for them. And, it's a huge weight off somebody's shoulders because you're basically the navigator through the political process. And you can pinpoint exactly where they need to get to so they don't get lost between point A and point B. You're basically the Garmin that gets the person to the destination. I love doing that. But
the main story, we had Chairman Montaneri on recently, and the main storyline out of the city council these days is fighting with the mayor, and particularly you and to a lesser extent Ed Montaneri. Seem to be very unhappy with Mayor Christman. Do you feel like the city is heading in the wrong direction?
No, I don't. And that's kind of the weird dichotomy in my head is I talked to the mayor and I introduced him at a ribbon cutting on Friday and we had a nice little chat. I have a ton of respect for Mayor Christman. I truly do. I have a disappointment with where the state of politics is in the city. Now, the city itself is flourishing despite a lot of this kind of infighting and behind the scenes chaos. But that's because St. Pete, we being a collective, not just me, my predecessor, previous mayors, yourself, Adam, everybody has built a name brand here. I would liken St. Pete to, at this point, it's like a polo, right? Well, if you compare it to clothing, it's a name brand. And we now have, we play into the national press all the time for quality of life. It's like the 1950s again, when you look at all the stuff that gets blasted nationally about how you got to get down to St. Pete. And, I've met so many people in the last even 2 months who have just moved here. And it's an incredible thing. I mean, selfishly, you go, hey, we have more congestion, more crowding. But if you have something special, you need to share it with others. And that's so that it's truly appreciated. That's the beauty of St. Pete.
Well, let me give you the alternative point of view, which I, to some extent, share as somebody that loves this city deeply. I worry when every other day, there's a new announcement for some 15, 20, 25-story condo or apartment complex for $1 million, $2 million homes on every square inch of the, particularly the greater downtown area, that we are not going to continue to be the great special place that's attracting all these people.
That is a concern that I am completely in agreement with you on. And, you know, I'm big in the preservationist community. I won the top award from St. Pete Preservation back in the day for restoring a 1909 place downtown. But, you know, we need to get the profile of preservation up, because, you know, you don't want to just become Anytown USA, right? Because if so, you know, it's just a couple of bars and, you know, go out and get drunk and have a good time and then crash at a hotel. We want people who are coming here for architectural tourism. We want people who are coming here for heritage tourism. We want to preserve what made this city great, you know, in the first boom in, you know, 1913, 1909, then the second boom in the 20s, then the third boom in the 50s. So there's been so many booms. We don't want this current one to wipe the history of the others off the, you know, the face of the earth. And yeah, I am concerned with the direction we're going with development. At the same time, you have to have smart development, and there is a lot to be said for individual property owner rights. So, you know, we took a tough vote the other day. It's a CRA vote. So as long as it meets the needs of the you know, in-town CRA goals, you have to approve it. But it's announced that we're tearing down the Shirley Ann Hotel. And I asked some questions about that. It's a hotel that's been boarded up for a number of years. And before that, it was very dilapidated. But it's a 1920s, you know, boomtown hotel. And you just never want to see stuff like that go. But, you know, there's only so much you can do when it gets to that point. And we saw that a couple of years ago with the third-party designations that were being done. It was an arm's-length transaction. A preservationist group would insert itself. And I understand and completely agree with where they were at and their heads were at. But that's why I have tried to work to preserve things and also to boost the reputation of preservation groups. A great example being the bait shop that I tried to put on the pier is, you know, the intention for that was to put Preserve the Berg in there so that they could raise their profile on the pier and tell the history of all the previous piers, tell the history of Beach Drive, while at the same time getting their financial clout up so that they could take a more active role in preservation projects like what made Savannah so successful.
Personally, I love the idea. As a guy that used to use that bait shop with my kids, I love the idea of having a bait shop there. That particular building that you were championing would look like the biggest piece of crap. I did not want that on my pier, but it was an interesting idea, absolutely.
Well, so I'll tell you about that. That building looked like a piece of crap in the photo they used, but it was matched to the $1 million pier. So it was a Mediterranean building, and it could have easily been restored for probably $50,000. And my plan was, if you have the marketplace of shops, you know, with the little solar panel, all those pop-outs. At the end of that, the support columns for the solar panels go from being anything else there. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to put the bait shop at the end of that facing the trolley line, and you could open it up as like a tourism stand for Preserve the Berg or something else. They could have, you know, high school kids getting their bright futures hours selling t-shirts and hats. And, you know, when I went to Savannah last year, I was really inspired when I took a bunch of tours there about how, you know, the way preservation worked in a town like Savannah was a concerned group of women got together in the 60s and they said, we're losing a lot of this town. They started pooling their resources, buying buildings and then putting covenants on them that when they resell them, hey, you can never tear this down. And we need to get the financial clout of preservation groups up, because there's nothing better that you can do than having an active role in it. Like I've done myself in the private sector is buying places and restoring them, you know, back to their former glory. That's the way to do it.
And that seems to be, you're a guy that often comes up with big ideas to your credit or interesting, unusual, you know, out of the box ideas. One of yours is to scrap what's going on with the big municipal services center on 4th Street and Central and basically move it to, I can't remember what we're supposed to call it. I call it Midtown. I don't know if that's allowed anymore, but to the Tangerine Plaza on 18th Avenue South, right? And that seems to be like a non-starter, but I guess my broader question is, it seems like you want to be mayor. Like we do have a strong mayor form of government and that the people voted for that is sort of like, we want a main guy in charge, not just a bureaucrat. And then you want to sort of usurp that role at times. It strikes me.
Well, I never want to take any power or credit away from somebody else. You know, I love the idea and the format of our government, because you have a council and, you know, to their credit, I want to make this very clear. My colleagues, I learn an incredible lot from them. I mean, Ed Montaneri, I love working with him. Brandy Gabbard has a you know, whip smart realtor mind, and she is a firecracker, and I got to sit next to her and I got to learn a lot from her too. There's a lot of Gina Driscoll, you know, I can go on, but everybody on the council is just has such an incredible viewpoint, and I learn a ton from them. That being said, though, I got into politics to get something done. And to quote a Drake song, I'm here for a good time, not for a long time. So I want to get in and I want to get stuff done, because I don't need that 20, 25 year career. I don't need the gold watch at the end of it. You know, I'll work hard and I'll buy my own gold watch. So I'm not here to get the awards. I'm not here to cut the ribbons. I'm here to cut the deals and get things done.
I feel like that's happening, though. Like, let's say that's a great idea to move the Municipal Services Center to Midtown. And it's certainly got a lot of good arguments for it. But it's not going to happen, because the process is already underway. And there are people already, developers already and whatnot, working on the Tangerine project.
So I couldn't disagree more, because at the end of the day, any deal has to be brought before council. So what is my role right now if I want to see my plan done? My role is not to sell people on my plan. It's to show how flawed the current plan is. And let's take a look at the deal we have in place. The mayor set up what is called, or what I'm going to call, a parlay deal. Okay. So he said, if you want the current municipal services, then you have to give us a new one. And we want a quote for both. So the deal we're at right now is a $12.2 million sale price. $12.2 million to sell the current municipal services building, which you can see behind me is that orange red bank when it used to be a bank. That's a statue of it. But to sell that for $12.2 million and then move it next to City Hall to a vacant lot we own that we're going to spend $42.5 million on. So that's like having a garage sale and losing $30 million. But in addition to that, we're also giving away half of the lot next to City Hall, which we own, for a private development, which is slated to be 70% market rate, 30% affordable housing. Well, we got the 30% affordable housing, but we gave up land that we already own. So that's, to me, an even worse deal. Also, $12.2 million for the entire block of 4th Street and Central, which is literally the most desirable commercial corridor in the entire city. It's 150,000 square feet. We just 2 weeks ago negotiated that we are paying $13 million to build what is called the Sankofa Project on 22nd Street, which is 28,000 square feet. So we're paying more money to build a place that's less than one-fifth the size in a much less desirable commercial neighborhood. It just doesn't seem like a good deal to me. And if you look at the numbers, we're not doing the best interest of the taxpayers by, okay, so we've taken on debt to do the pier. We took on debt to do the police station. We're now talking about how we don't have enough money to fix up our marina, which is delinquent. We're talking about taking on another $30 million in bonding to get a new municipal services building. Well, that makes no sense when we have a Tangerine Plaza grocery store, which is built in 05 and has also been vacant for years. And the mayor has instructed our staff not to evict the tenants who are in there. Make no mistake, the tenants who are in there, a number of them do not pay rent and have not paid rent in years. I mean, this is the definition of a government boondoggle. So you kill two birds with one stone, maybe three if you look at it like that, in that you still will sell this municipal services at a different rate, and you will get that back on the tax roll and get that developed to have a more cohesive downtown. You fill Tangerine Plaza, which right now is sitting vacant and is not doing us any good. You then get all the contractors and all the people who are going to municipal services that get stuck on Central Avenue right now. You send them to Midtown, but you also save $30 million. You don't develop a vacant lot, which has a higher and better use downtown, and you bring economic growth, true economic growth, to Midtown. Let me quote another movie, because Boys in the Hood, they say either they don't know or they don't show, right? And right now, city employees don't know and they don't show in that neighborhood. Why do you think we have all these palm trees that are cut down on 16th Street and spray painted? We didn't even stump grind them. I don't accuse anybody of malice. It's just we don't know what's happening there because nobody goes down there on a regular basis. And this is the way to bring Midtown and true equity to the forefront of every conversation and to create purchasing power.
You've been on the opposite side of the votes in some cases for the Midtown. When we talk about Midtown, we're talking about a heavily African-American area that in some ways needs help. But you're often on the opposite side of the votes on the two African-American council members, like the, what is it, Sankofa? That's the Deuces Rising project that was kind of a residential commercial. And that vote, whether valid or not, engenders some ill will, especially given the history in St. Pete, and it's a homegrown successful construction company that's worked a bunch of places besides St. Pete. I guess I'm asking, shouldn't there be some deference to the people that represent the districts in question?
The answer is absolutely yes. And let me break down that Sankofa deal again for you. It's moving forward, and I subscribe to the form of governance, and I trust the process, right? That deal is happening. I'm on board for it, and I want it to be a massive, massive success. But why I was against it was, if you look at the deal, again, the numbers. We're spending $13 million on that. We're selling this for $12.2 million, you know, our current municipal services. Those numbers don't add up. But also, you know, it was purported, and the claim was it was going to be true equity for that neighborhood, for so many people. You know, there's six or seven principals who are involved with it, and they're not even going to own the building. So that's not true equity to me when six or seven, you know, members of the community don't even have ownership stake. Now, what would be true equity to me would have been taking that $13 million or a similarly priced deal, our municipal services, and taking that $13 million and giving it away to entrepreneurs. So you divide $13 million by 25,000, you get around 500. So we could give around 500 different entrepreneurs from the neighborhood, which you'd assume would be largely Black, $25,000 grants. And what I'd like to see them do with it would be, well, if we're moving municipal services down there, there's going to be demand for coffee. You know, there's going to be demand for breakfast sandwiches. There's going to be demand for lunch. There's going to be demand for sodas. There's going to be demand for everything. So all of a sudden, the purchasing power that we bring by the clientele who's going to municipal services and our city employees, you don't want gentrification, because that's what would naturally happen when you move things down there. That purchasing power would bring about gentrification. We prevent that by then financing a program where we give out grants to individuals from the neighborhood. And there's no true equity like having ownership of the buildings in a neighborhood.
Are any of your council members, do you think Christman's going to be shot down on his municipal services?
I have no idea, because, you know, Sunshine Law, I mean, I know it's a non-starter for administration, but I don't know how any of my colleagues feel. But I'll tell you this much. I was spent over an hour on Saturday night with my former neighbor when I lived in Midtown. I lived in Midtown for 3.5, 4 years, right across from Melrose Elementary at 17th and 13th. I was hanging out with the guy from down the block on Saturday for about an hour. He was telling me, you know, how all the changes in the neighborhood, how he wished there were still more that needs to be done. And I was telling him, hey, I work on that every day. So I don't know if we can do it, but I don't see why we can't, because it's truly not that crazy of an idea I'm thinking about to have all these things come together. And again,
I think there's a lot to it that makes sense. Or I really do.
$15 million in grants that I'm talking about, that would give people the down payment to buy buildings in the historically Black neighborhoods. They can be owned by Black entrepreneurs. And that's how we get true equity.
The raise, let's finish. I don't want to take too much of your time, but where do you see this Tropicana Field development review or selection process in 3 months?
Okay, so in 3 months is going to be difficult to say. I'm hearing that there's not been a lot of communication between the Raising administration since our last committee of the whole meeting. Where I think we eventually end up is, I think and I hope that Mayor Kreisman will step up to the plate and we'll try and work with them, because for me right now, at least for the next 12-month period, 12 to 18 months, it's a non-starter to do anything without the raise. Now, beyond that, all bets are off, because, you know, we were always trying to get them to do something and they had no motivation to at all compel, or didn't have any, you know, compelling reason to negotiate with us, because they had 50% of their development rights on the table. We're now looking where they got 2027, you got about 5.5 years left. Right. If you look at it like that, if they mess around for more than about another year, then they can, you know, hit the bricks, get out, and we'll develop and we'll start looking at 2027 because it's not that far off in the commercial world. That being said, I do like the Rays and I like their proposal. And, you know, again, Split City, I don't own the team. I don't have to deal with the logistics, but they're willing to make up for that deficit by committing to bring the Rowdies to a new Tropicana Field stadium, and they're willing to bring spring training. But the importance to me of the Rowdies being brought there is the consolidation. So you turn an 86-acre site into a 96-acre site because you get all 10 acres plus from the Al Lang site that then gets to be redeveloped. We have to be smart, right? We have to
But the Rays haven't put anything on the table. That's not a proposal that's specifically on the table.
That's what they've always shared in their talks, and we haven't been willing to share the proposal that they've shared with us. I mean, I've seen the proposal. Everybody else has seen the proposal on council, but the mayor said it was a non-starter, so it hasn't been shared with the public. But that's certainly where their head's at, and they are really willing to deal. I mean, make no mistake, they have presented in good faith plenty of offers, and then we're going down there, and we're throwing press conferences in their front yard saying that they're crooks and they're criminals and they're asking for too much. And that's not the way to do business.
But that proposal where they're taking control of so much of the land, you think that's a good deal for the city and the taxpayers?
So first of all, that was a starting offer. And second of all, yes, I do. So the mayor said that it was a 50 acre they asked for. That is not true. Okay. They asked for 50 acres was what they showed the development around. 15 of that was a waterfront park that they were going to maintain at their expense along the creek. That was supposed to be a sweetener. But if we want to throw that back, okay, you already knock it down to 35 off the bat. So then you have a 35-acre site. They wanted about 15 acres for the stadium, and they wanted 20 acres. Yes, they did ask for 20 acres outright as the credit for our contribution to a new stadium so that we'd have zero general revenue funds presented to that. Now, here's the kicker. A new stadium is going to cost you $600, $700, $800 million. We would get our third contribution for that. So we'd get $200-plus million worth of credit on that. But our own appraisals for the site only have the valuation of all 86 acres between $49 million and $279 million. So, yes, it's a great deal for the taxpayer because we're getting credits beyond what we think the whole site's worth for less than a quarter of the site. It's absolutely a killer deal.
Huh. So that's how often do you talk to Mayor Kreisman?
My phone line's always open to him. I set up a meeting with him every month for a council meeting. Council members are supposed to have one-on-ones. It seems that in the last 6 or 8 months, he's had 5 or 6 cancellations. But my line of communication is always open, and I always will work with somebody who's as tenured and pedigreed in the political world as him, because make no mistake, Mayor Kreisman knows how to get things done, and it's just getting him on board with the vision, because he truly is a leader. He's accomplished a ton in his career, and I have the utmost respect and deference for him. And it's unfortunate.
But if you're texting out pictures of him without a mask on momentarily at a game and mocking him, that's not the greatest way to get a dialogue going. And that he did it back at you, it seemed like, holy cow, these are grownups?
Here's the thing. Have you ever had a friend where you guys razz each other? You know, I told the mayor the other day, I said, you know, mayor, I love you. And my one sadness from my first 2 years in politics is that I don't have a closer relationship with him. You know, Rick Baker, you can say all you want about him, but he's always been there when I've called him to take a phone call and explain something to me about the process. I've invited Mayor Kreisman out to lunch maybe 20 times since I've been on council. I'm a young guy. I respect all of these leaders of the past and currently. I mean, Bill Foster, Bob Albert, these guys have all been great with me. And I think that Mayor Kreisman will go down as having a good record of good things he's done. My sadness is that our relationship could never be closer. And, you know, it's not lost on me that in a 3-man race, he endorsed 2 people and neither of them were me. But I'm willing to look beyond those things. And I'm sad that our relationship is not better, because there's always something that can be learned from somebody who's had such a level of success like he has at all levels that he's gone for.
All right. Well, Robert Blackman, I appreciate you coming on very much. Good to see you.
Absolutely. This is an absolute pleasure, and we'd love to be on anytime. And it's always great to talk to you, Adam.
We'll do it again. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for doing this.